In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Bo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back. It's good to be here. Right, Mitch?
Roll damn tide.
Roll damn tide. If you didn't catch last week's episode, Mitch is a newfound Alabama Crimson Tide fan, in our college football matchmaker game. And true to his word, he comes to this Zoom today that we're doing to record this podcast with a beautiful Alabama hat. Mitch, describe it for the listeners.
Black with the red A, the Crimson A. You can't mistake it. And behind me, I got the man, Bear Bryant, the greatest college football coach of all time. Look, it's an experience. I'm an A's fan. I'm a Bears fan. I've never been a fan of a winner. And so now I'm a fan of a winner. So I have to just embrace this fully. I don't care if you call me a front runner. I really don't. I like being a fan of a winner now. This feels good. Roll damn tide.
I love how you put that, like being the fan of like a winning team. It's just so sad. You know, I feel bad.
But I'm happy happiness for you. In my life.
Oh, I'm excited for you, my friend. The hat looks great. It's got a great white outline around the red A that just pops off the black. We looked at a couple after the podcast. They're all red.
It was a whole
looked
thing.
Nice. But the black, I think, was a good call.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing. But it's a done deal now. I am a
yeah,
Crimson Tide fan.
Crimson Tide, and hey, a big win for your team last week over Southern Miss, 63-14. Hey, big matchup on Saturday for the Crimson Tide. Number 12 Ole Miss Heisman favorite, Matt Corral, the QB from Ole Miss. He's fun to watch, folks. If you want a little preview of a guy who could be rising up NFL draft boards, this is a great game to watch. Two of the Heisman favorites here, Bryce Young, quarterback for Bama, and then Matt Corral for Ole Miss. Big time matchup.
Big time. I you know what? I really don't like all the Kristen Saban hate that I've seen the Ole Miss fraternities doing. I don't like all the Saban hate. So you know what? We're just going to, hey, let that roll right off the back. We're still the best team in the country. Roll damn tide.
Mitch is already in on the ride. He already knows what the beefs are. You're tuned into the fan base already after a week.
Absolutely. You got to buy in 100%. I don't half-ass anything on here, Graf. I go all in all the time.
All
roll
gas,
damn tide.
No breaks for Mitch and the Alabama fandom. I love it. My BYU Cougars still going strong. 13 in the country. 4-0, got it done against South Florida this week, Mitch. A Friday night matchup in Logan, Utah for the wagon wheel, the in-state rivalry between Utah State Aggies and the BYU Cougars. It's a fun one. This is my favorite weekend of the college football year, Mitch, because with my show on Saturdays, there's twice a year we don't have a show on that Saturday. This coming Saturday is one of those. And before that weekend, every year, BYU plays Utah State on Friday night. So we get to go to the game, a late kick, have a blast. And then I actually get to sleep in the next day and enjoy a Saturday off. It's a beautiful weekend.
I am so excited to have a rivalry game to look forward to. Like, I have the Iron Bowl to look forward to now.
Yes.
I'm so excited for the Alabama-Auburn matchup that we usually have at the end of the year. I'm saying we now, like I've been a part of this. I'm brand new.
You're in.
I'm in though. I'm in though. And I am going to take every opportunity to drop a roll tide wherever I can. So guess what? Roll damn tide.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. I do have to mention before we get into this, folks, as you know, with the newest NHL franchise, the Seattle Kraken, of which Mitch and I have devoted our fandom to. Speaking of new fandoms, the Seattle Kraken played their first preseason game just a few days ago. It's officially underway, the era of the Seattle Kraken. And sure enough, Mitch, I had to come to this podcast wearing my beloved Seattle Kraken hoodie, courtesy of my parents, beautiful, who sent it to me. And then, you know, in the background here, A real Kraken, and an old ancient painting of a Kraken. Oh, it's a beautiful vibe.
Let's not pretend that there's multiple Kraken. There is one Kraken.
There is the Kraken. That's right.
And yeah,
not Krakeye, Kraken.
It's Kraken. Yeah, no Krakeye. You got a beautiful painting of our beloved Kraken up there. So taking down a pirate ship, by the way.
It's a good time. It's exciting here in the world of sports. Training camps underway in the NBA this week. All the teams had their media day Monday, Tuesday. We're recording this here Tuesday, September 28th. So that's underway. The MLB postseason's right around the corner. We're going to actually touch on that at the end of the podcast here today, give you a little preview of what to expect as the final division and wild card races wrap up here in the next week or so, and we jump into the postseason. But Mitch, we're going to focus today on week 3 in the NFL. We're actually going to go through every game from last week with a little fun in a buy or sell segment. Buy or sell a certain storyline or an idea about a team or a player, some early season narratives in the NFL, if you will. So that is what we have on tap today.
Yeah. Before we get going into the week 3, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't do a little housekeeping before we got going. Last time I did this was probably late spring, beginning of summer. And we did a little housekeeping of the Pit of Misery. Some people in there that have served their sentence. This is my realm. They've served their sentence. And some people, you know what? They just have not, they've just been in there too long and they need to get released. So before we get going, Pit of Misery, Dilly Dilly, by the way.
Yes.
We are going to let out Corey Davis, and I'm not sure why Corey Davis was in there. I think it had something to do with the fact that he was a top 5 pick and then never actually performed, but new beginnings for him, that could change. So I want to take Corey Davis out of the Pit of Misery.
One of my favorite things about the Pit of Misery is the people that get in there and then we forget why they were even in there in the first place. And that inevitable, like, we got to let him go because we actually don't know why they're here.
Yeah. There was one I considered dropping out. That would be Alberto Riveron because he is now officially retired. But he was such a terrible official when the whole replay thing and the pass interference thing. So he's going to stay in there for life. That's a life sentence for Alberto Riveron. I am going to let out whoever schedules Monday Night Football. They get out. We've had some great Monday Night Football games, great primetime games across the board. Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, but Monday Night Football has been exceptionally good. And so we are going to let out whoever schedules Monday Night Football.
Okay.
No longer part of the Pit of Misery.
I think that's fair. I'd have to agree. I mean, we had Baltimore, Vegas, week 1, great matchup. Last week, Detroit, Green Bay is fine. I thought this week wasn't necessarily great, but Vegas, Chargers, the week after that, Indy, Baltimore, Buffalo, Tennessee. I mean, we've got some great matchups coming forward. So I think you're right there, Mitch.
Yeah, they've definitely heard my words. They absorbed this. Hey, Mitch says we're sucking on this. We got to pick this up a little bit. I appreciate the work put in by that. Kevin Cash, manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, gets out. I put him in here because of his decision to take Blake Snell out in the sixth inning of that Game 6 World Series game. You brought up a great point that Justin Turner got taken out of that Game 6 game because he tested positive mid-game, and had they probably kept him in there, they don't force a Game 7. There is no Game 7 in that World Series, and we're talking about World Series champion Tampa Bay Rays instead of World Series champion with an asterisk. Because Dallin said it.
Maybe I said that.
Los Angeles Dodgers.
That episode might be deleted. I don't know.
You know, we're on the back end of another baseball season. So I think it's time for Kevin Cash to be removed.
Fair enough. And, a year after that World Series appearance, the Rays are 97-59, best record in the AL. Already clinched a spot, you know, already clinched the
good team.
AL East. So, good team. He's done a pretty good job.
Yeah, very, very, very good team. I mean, he's a great manager. I thought that decision was terrible.
It was a horrible decision. Don't get me wrong. I'm grateful that he made such a boneheaded decision, you know, and then sent Blake Snell to the eternal pit of hell in San Diego. So that's, you know, that's just the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Tough to see over there in San Diego. And then the last one is I'm going to take ESPN out for their production of the Home Run Derby. Look, just get better next time. You served a short sentence. It was a misdemeanor, really, at best of what they did. But it was a pretty piss-poor production of the Home Run Derby. So ESPN gets out, which leaves us with the final standing pit of misery, which is the guy that gave Dion Waiters the edibles, Houston Astros, Alberto Riveron, COVID-19, Bill O'Brien, Christian Hackenberg, Dan Snyder, Rob Manfred, the guy that voted Big Ben Comeback Player of the Year, James Dolan, the worst owner in all of sports, LeBron James for his hack job of trying to sell that he was actually hurt, and Patrick Beverley for being a dickhead. So that is the pit of misery right now. Dilly dilly. We've got some housekeeping out of the way.
Dilly dilly, Mitch. You know, I think we should schedule in next week to have some conversations of additions to the pit of misery. Because
I think so.
You know, I think there's some people around the sports world right now that may be deserving of, you know, some eternal damnation.
Yeah. I mean, there are some lifetime sentences out there that are definitely getting under the radar. Yeah. So maybe we need to have a little discussion about maybe
who
needs
court
to be there. Yeah.
Make some sentencings.
But, you know, we need to have a little prison reform here because we're getting full down here.
Yes,
so we need to figure out how to make a little room.
Running out of space. Time to let them free on the street. I love it, Mitch. All right. Let's jump into our week 3 recap. And again, how this is going to go is we're going to look at every game with a buy or sell question in mind. Just the big storyline that we're taking away from this, sort of the big topic. After not only this game, but just 3 weeks in this NFL season, it seems like we're starting to understand a little bit more about these teams and sort of gauge some overreactions right now. We asked for participation from you, the listeners, on our Instagram. And if you don't already follow us, go ahead and do that there. The Instagram is at the Sports Hour, guys. We asked what your biggest surprise so far of this NFL season has been, and we've got some replies, which we'll include here, so we appreciate those who responded. And we're going to start, Mitch, with Thursday Night Football. Austin mentioned this team as one of his big surprises. My team, Mitch, the Carolina Panthers, and he said one of his biggest surprises is Carolina dominating. And so far, Mitch, the Panthers are 3-0, one of 5 teams in the NFL to start the season. 3-0. You can point to their strength of schedule, if you will, the teams that they've played, you know, Davis Mills in his NFL starting debut in the Houston Texans. Okay. Zach Wilson in his NFL debut with the Jets. Okay. The Saints, who are 2-1, and, you know, I think people expect them to be somewhat of a playoff team. That was an impressive win. There is a test to come for the Panthers. But buy or sell the Carolina Panthers as a playoff contender?
This is a tricky one because when you look at the landscape of the NFC, there's one team coming out of the North. Okay. I don't think any other team other than the Packers is good enough to come out of the North. As much as that hurts me to say, the NFC, damn it, the whole freaking division could make it. We you know, that division
Which
is
one?
Just that good. The NFC West, sorry, excuse me. NFC West, you know, that whole division couldn't make it. I mean, they're just that good. Now, logistically speaking, it's not, I guess technically it's possible, but it's not feasible because they play each other too many times throughout the course of the year. The NFC East, we'll get into that in a little bit. That one's a complicated thing. When you look at what the Panthers have to compete with really is just the Buccaneers and a very hot or cold Saints team. Yeah, the Panthers are playoff contenders. Sam Darnold has had a rebirth for his career. I think this is the best thing that could have possibly happened to him. He's given weapons to throw to. The defense we knew was going to be good. The defense was going to be good, especially that front seven. The Panthers are absolutely playoff contenders. Will they be in the playoffs? That's yet to be seen, because there is a lot of really competitive teams in the NFC. And I just mentioned the NFC West and how competitive that division is. But when you really look at it, the Panthers probably finishing second to the Bucks, and I could see them finishing second in that division outright and maybe sneaking in as a 6 or a 7 seed. So yeah, I like the Panthers as contenders.
You know, I'm obviously buying as well, Mitch. And I'm going to be honest. I did not have high expectations for this team this year. And I'm still tempering my expectations. I'm not fully buying in. We are a playoff team. It's 3 games. But there are positive signs so far. One, as you mentioned, the play of Sam Darnold, who has looked like a completely different player than he ever looked with the New York Jets. There's so many weapons around him. He's in such a better situation with a play caller like Joe Brady, with weapons around him. The loss of Christian McCaffrey is going to hurt, but I don't think it's going to stop this team. There's too many good players on this offense, and Sam Darnold being put in positions to succeed are going to help. But it's really, Mitch, the leap that it looks like they've taken on the defensive side of the ball. 2 years ago, they spent every pick in the NFL draft on a defensive player. And we're seeing the fruits of that investment already. Derek Brown improved in year 2. Jeremy Chinn at that safety position has been excellent. Shaq Thompson, in the absence of Luke Kuechly, last year was a struggle for him. This year, he seemingly has emerged as that go-to lockdown Panthers linebacker that we're accustomed to seeing. Brian Burns has taken it to another level. J.C. Horn is injured. He showed out well in those first couple games. They just traded a 3rd-round pick for C.J. Henderson, Mitch, a guy who was a top 10 pick just a year ago. When those guys are healthy, J.C. Horn and C.J. Henderson as your lockdown man coverage cornerbacks, holy cow. That defense can be legit, and they're already showing you signs of that. So I am buying this team as a playoff contender, because if the defense is this good, Sam Darnold, good or average, they're going to be fine. Like, they can win 10 games and put themselves in a position to be a playoff team.
Yeah, when J.C. Horn's healthy with C.J. Henderson on the other side, that's as good as a tandem at your cornerbacks that you could ever ask for. I mean, that's solid. So yeah, absolutely.
I will say too, 3-0, we've talked about how easy the schedule is, but get this, Mitch, this is their first 8 games. So the next 5 games on their schedule at Dallas this week, that's a tough test for them. But then they've got the Eagles, the Vikings, at the Giants, and at the Falcons. Maybe they lose 2 games. They could be 8 games into the season sitting at 6-2. 6-2 through 8 games, no matter how hard the second half of your schedule is, which they have a remaining 4 games that is very tough. I mean, if you've already got to 8, 9, 10 wins at that point, it doesn't matter. You're going to be in a great spot. So I think it's really realistic for the Panthers. If they continue at this rate, the defense plays well, and Darnold doesn't turn into New York Darnold again, they should be all right. Very exciting, Mitch. We got to go to your team next, and it's just not quite as exciting right now for the Chicago Bears, who lost this game to the Cleveland Browns. What was a pretty rough game, 26-6. Mitch, the buy or sell we have for this, are we buy or sell Matt Nagy finishes the year as the head coach of the Chicago Bears?
I'm going to buy it. I mean, this is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. Justin Tucker kicked a field goal this week that covered more yardage than the entire Bears offense accumulated throughout the entire game. Justin Tucker kicked a 66-yard field goal. The Bears accumulated 47 yards of total offense throughout the entire game. I mean, this is embarrassing. This is a guy who's supposed to be an offensive guru coming over from Kansas City. He doesn't, and you know what? It's not his fault. There are some people that can not step up and be that head coach role, right? They're better as a coordinator. Josh McDaniels might be a perfect example of that. What we saw when he went to Denver and then he went back to New England. Okay. There are people that just can't do that. Matt Nagy is an example of that. He can't do that. He's not capable of being a head coach in the NFL. So no, I don't think, or so yeah, I think that he will not be the head coach.
So you're
coach
selling
then
because the question is buy or sell. He finishes.
Oh,
the year.
Sorry.
So you're selling.
He does not finish the year. Sorry. Yes. I am. He will not be the head coach by the end of the year. I think we'll see Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator, become the head coach, or I think we'll see John DeFilippo, who has had a coordinator role in the past. He's the quarterbacks and pass game coordinator right now for the Bears. I think that we'll see him fill in as an interim role. But yeah, Matt Nagy needs to get the hell out of Chicago. I don't want him anymore. He's going to ruin this rookie quarterback that we have, this guy that we've been waiting for, and he's going to ruin it. Get him out of there.
Mitch, I'm actually going to buy that he finishes the year as a head coach, and not because the team is any good. I just don't think they're going to fire. I just have a feeling that they're not going to fire him during the season. Now, will
Ryan
they fire
Pace sucks
now,
too,
now
so.
Will they fire him the Monday after the season ends? Like probably maybe Sunday afternoon as he's getting to his locker after the game, maybe, but like, I think he'll last this full season. And I think it'll be a clear house. I think Pace will be gone. I think Nagy will be gone. I think everybody will be gone. And that's why you would do it after the season is over. So I'm going to buy that he's the coach, which honestly, Mitch, I know it's not great for maybe the future of your team, but for the present, for the near future, aka the NFL draft, it might be better that he's the head coach throughout the season. If it ends up, they mean, you know, they win 4 or 5 games, as opposed to giving a John DeFilippo guys buying it around him. And all of a sudden you get to 7-10 and you're drafting 13th. So I, either way,
get that top six pick. And
it's a tough start for the Bears, obviously. And it doesn't get much easier. Lions this week, but then Raiders, Packers, Bucks, Niners, Steelers before a bye in week 10. So it's not going to get any easier over the next couple of weeks. You got to get a win against Detroit and then hope you can win a couple against what will be a pretty tough slate.
You know, the Bears did this in the 70s before the Ditka era. They were bad. They were really bad. Maybe we're coming up on another Ditka era. Maybe we'll find our next Mike Ditka. That's
I love the optimism. Hey,
it's optimistic, but I got to find something to be happy about with the Bears. I got to.
Franchises go through ebbs and flows, and you got to understand that. And you have the right mindset as a fan of a team who it looks like your team's going into a dip. You got to buy the potential, buy the wave, right? What can come after this? After a low has to come a high. So the high will come if you get the right players and the right coaches. I think you have some of those right players, absolutely. And Justin Fields is still one of them. As rough as it looked on Sunday, I still think, I don't think with any of these rookie quarterbacks, and we're going to talk about basically all of them throughout this week because it has been a rough start for the rookie quarterbacks, but I don't think we should be selling on any of those guys yet. Just got to get the right people in place. So, we'll see. But 3 games in, who knows? Maybe they'll be a playoff team again, right?
I hope so.
Probably not. Okay, Mitch, Washington and Buffalo. Buffalo, 43-21. Just puts it on. Puts it on Washington. And didn't even try to run the ball either. They were like, we don't need to run the ball. Just keep throwing it with Josh Allen. Bills look back to what we saw last year. So, Mitch, we're going to focus on Washington here with this bet, with this buy or sell. Buy or sell that we are a year too early on the Washington football team. A mistake that we have made as football fans so many times in the past, a year early on the Browns a couple years ago, a year early on who was the team last year that we were all collectively too early on?
Oh, probably a year early on the Dolphins.
Oh, the Cardinals. The Cardinals
was the team
thought last year was going to be it. And look at them now. Seems like, yeah, we are probably just a year too early. Is this the next case of we're a year too early on this team?
Absolutely. I'm buying this. And I'm just as guilty as anyone else. Yes, we were a year too early on the football team. I almost slipped up there. Wow, it's been a whole year since we haven't had that name, and I almost slipped up. Yeah, we're a year too early. I think this defense is fantastic. I still do. And I love Riverboat Ron. I have a lot of confidence in them. I think that they'll be a mid-pack team. But for them, I think I had them at like 11-6 and winning the division. Yeah, that's too early. That's a little bit too early. And I think, you know, Ron will be there for a while. I think he's a great culture changer. And he's got this team headed in the right direction. But yeah, we're just a little bit too early on the football team.
I mean, listen, there's a lot of factors that go into this. I consider, first off, that Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was acquired this offseason to be the stable force at quarterback to help sort of elevate your offensive playmakers with a veteran presence, was injured in the first game, and it's been Taylor Heinicke, and Heinicke has potential, but he's young, and with a young quarterback is going to be ups and downs. And I think that's going to be the resulting outcome of a lot of their games, is a lot of ups and a lot of downs. But I think the biggest thing where we were premature on was just the defense, which was so good last year. But we often forget as NFL fans that defensive regression is just, it exists. It happens almost every year. You know, defenses staying consistent year after year after year is very rare. And usually those are veteran laden units that have been together for a long time and same DC. And you sort of, you know, have this continuity. This is still a young emerging football team defensive front, which has a ton of talent, but it's going to take some time to fully get to that, you know, highly productive level. And we're seeing it early on, you know, 20 points and a loss they gave up against the Chargers. That's a solid performance in week one, but they won in week two, but gave up 29 to the Giants. That's not a good look. And then you give up 43 to the Buffalo Bills the very next week. So early season struggles for this Washington football team defense. And I'm with you. It's not that they're going to win 4 or 5 games. They may win 7, 8 games still, but not the playoff contender, you know, division favorite like a lot of people expected this year.
We're high on Washington's defense the way that we were high on the Browns' offense just a couple of years ago. On paper, it looks fantastic.
And you saw all the potential, too, of what it would be.
Yeah, but it takes some time to let the unit get together. You know?
Absolutely. So, it takes time and it takes reps. And these guys exactly. need more reps, and that will come.
Yep, absolutely. So,
all right, Mitch, next game here, the Steelers and the Bengals. Bengals get a win here in the division, 24-10. It wasn't even really close throughout the game. Bengals took, extended the lead in the third quarter, and that was about it. Steelers anemic on offense. Mitch, we're going to focus on the Steelers here with this buy or sell, and specifically their quarterback. Buy or sell, Big Ben is washed. It's over for Big Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're buying it.
He's washed.
He's washed.
And he's washed. And it doesn't help that he's throwing the ball 58 times in a game. I think if you really want to get the best out of Big Ben, you pound the ball with Najee Harris and you let Big Ben and Najee Harris and whatever running back group they got behind him. And you let Big Ben throw the ball 30 to 35 times a game and just let him do that. You don't throw the ball 58 times a game with a guy that has taken, quite honestly, he's had a brutal career as far as what his body's taken. I mean, this guy has gotten beaten up. He has played through injuries. He played through a broken ankle a couple years ago. I mean, a broken leg or whatever it was. Like, this guy has taken a beating, and you cannot put him through that anymore with this type of workload. I honestly expected better out of Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, one of the greatest NFL coaches of our generation. You could put him in that conversation, I think, before too long, of one of the greatest of all time. But, you know, you got to know when the guy's just starting to wear down. And it's very apparent that Ben is getting there. You can't force the issue anymore. He's washed. You got to be more careful with a guy like that.
This is Mitch, in my mind, and I'm buying too, by the way. I'm buying in that maybe it's not that it's over, he can't play anymore, but it's clearly like this has got to be the last year, right? I mean, like, this has got to be the last year. And the thing is, Mitch, my biggest issue with this is just the overall team building aspect of this. We talked about this in the offseason. They should have gone out and secured at least somebody to be the future at quarterback. And guess what? It's not Dwayne Haskins. Okay, it's not.
Dwayne Haskins
is a shot in the dark on a guy who is a top 15 pick. A thing that you should absolutely do if you're a smart organization, as well run as the Steelers are, you take a shot on guys like that and maybe you get lucky every once in a while. But they should have invested in the draft at a potential heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. And they should have addressed the glaring weakness they had on their team, which was their offensive line. And instead of doing either of those things, Mitch, they drafted a running back in the first round in Najee Harris. And you and I both like Najee Harris as a prospect. We like him as a player. And you saw the vision of what they had in mind when they drafted him. And I wasn't super critical of that pick at the time. But ultimately, we're seeing the result of it, which is Najee Harris is running behind an awful offensive line. And guess what? Now you have no run game. Doesn't matter who you have back there running the ball if your offensive line sucks. And it's forced them to put the ball in the hands of a washed Big Ben. And that's the issues that they're coming to. So, you know, ultimately, this season, whether they win 8 games, whether they win 4 games, there's going to have to be a real question about the future. And I think the Steelers have to be willing to make some serious moves to address the future of their franchise.
I mean, think about it like this. Like, I think we get this illusion that Lev Bell in his prime was this fantastic running back, which he was, but let's not forget that he was running behind a fantastic offensive line.
It always helps.
That's why he was able to be so patient. And they said he's such a patient runner. Well, it's because his offensive line was doing work. I mean, the hogs up front were putting in the work. And as talented as Najee Harris is, like you just said, you know, that never happens when the offensive line is bad. It never happens. We saw it in Oakland last year with Josh Jacobs, very talented running back, but he had a down year compared to his rookie year because the offensive line was banged up and not very good. So, and we see it with quarterbacks all the time. They get hit.
It's a very easy correlation. You look at the best offensive line units in the league, and I bet you all of those teams are top 10 in rushing. You know what I mean? It's an easy correlation because they have to go together. So
sure.
Steelers are in a tough spot, Mitch. And because they won the division last year, they're going to be facing a very tough slate. They're going to get all the division winners from the AFC, you know, so they're going to get the Chiefs. They've already had the Bills. They somehow won that game. You know, they are in a tough division in the AFC North, as we know. Ravens twice, Browns twice. It's not going to be an easy, you know, haul for the Steelers, who have already started 1-2 and have glaring holes. I mean, they've got Green Bay on Sunday. So there you go. It's, you know, it's not going to get any easier. So Steelers are in a tough spot. I'm selling the Steelers and I'm buying Big Ben is washed. I'm right there with you, Mitch.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to another divisional matchup. This one, the AFC South, Indianapolis and Tennessee. Titans getting the win over the Colts 25-16. Mitch, the Titans go to 2-1 in the division. The Colts are 0-3. Buy or sell that the Titans are the clear and only favorite to win the AFC South division.
Look, we know the Texans aren't good. They got that week one win. I was a little bit lucky.
And they got it with Tyrod Taylor,
which
not is playing.
Not playing.
Davis Mills is their quarterback. Davis Mills. So.
Yeah, they're at Davis Mills, which Davis Mills, by the way, looked decent. Jaguars, that's a whole nother story we'll get to later on down the road. The Colts, man, we thought this defense was going to prop them up, and they're just not there. The Titans, though, are doing exactly what we thought they were going to do, which was run the hell out of the football, give it to Derrick Henry, and things will be just fine. Yeah, they're the favorite. I'm buying. They are the favorite, and it's a clear cut. I know I was high on the Colts. I was high on a Carson Wentz comeback, the marriage between Carson Wentz and Frank Reich. You know, they have a history going back to Philadelphia. Love that combination. But I don't think this is it. I think this is the Titans division to lose, and this might be the Titans, like I said, I think I had them at 9 wins. They might win 9 or 10 games and still win this division just because, you know, the rest of the division just doesn't look that good. They don't.
Yeah, you know, and it's obviously three games into this, you know, that's the purpose of this exercise. But I'm with you. I'm buying this. And when we talked about this in our NFL preview and throughout the preseason, it seemed like this was going to be a two-team race, right? I mean, obviously, Houston, we looked at as one of the worst teams in the NFL. They may well be one of the worst teams in the NFL by the end of the season, especially with the rookie Davis Mills having to take over the starting job. The Jags have looked worse than expectations. Shouldn't have expected them to be great, but they've been really, really bad. And the Colts are sitting at 0-3 when you and I expected both the Colts and the Titans to be anywhere between 8, 9, and 10 wins, right? So I think right now, I can't see any of the other three teams winning this division. I would be shocked at this point, honestly, if by the end of the season, anyone other than the Titans was the winner of the AFC South. So I think the Titans are the clear favorite, and they might win 9 games, like you said, 9-8, and they'll still win the division by 2 games. You know, I don't think it's going to be very close. And this Colts defense has been the biggest disappointment. You know, the offense was going to take time. Carson Wentz, I know his familiarity with Frank Reich, but he has no familiarity with the Indianapolis Colts, with any of the roster, with the whole facilities. I mean, he spent his whole career in Philadelphia. So to expect him in the first 3 games to immediately look like it was clicking, that was always going to take a bit of time. Your hope was that the defense as a strength and the offensive line as a strength would carry them through the early parts of the season and those offensive struggles. The offensive line gets injured. That has been a huge factor for them. No Braden Smith, no Quentin Nelson. That's played a factor. And this defense has not been good to start, and that certainly hasn't helped. So unless the defense turns around and starts playing at a higher level and they can overcome some of these injuries, it's going to be tough sledding for the Colts.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle for them for sure.
All right, Mitch, next game was our garbage game of the week, Falcons and Giants, and it was kind of basically a garbage game, 14-17, right? The Falcons get the win on the road. A game-winning field goal by Young Hoku, so I don't want to, you know, for the quality of a game, anytime you get a game-winning play, that's exciting, so good for you, but, you know, all 200 people that watched probably didn't enjoy it, so... Mitch, our takeaway here, we want to focus on the Giants, right? Who now start the season 0-3. This was sort of a make it break it year in some ways for them. And I think in particular for their quarterback, Daniel Jones, now in his third season as the starter. Buy or sell, Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback for the New York Giants next season, at the starting opening night of next season.
I've bought a lot so far. I'm selling here. He's not the starting quarterback.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
And I think he is the perfect example of being a victim of circumstance, because there's nothing else around him. I mean, with the exception of what Saquon and Kenny Galladay, there's not a whole lot there to help
him out. I don't like that narrative, Mitch. I'm going to be honest. I don't like that narrative that he is victim of circumstance, because no one has turned the ball over more in the last 3 years than Daniel Jones.
When you're constantly on the run.
You can't blame all of that on what's around him. And I get, you know, that other, you know, there's other factors in play for quarterbacks.
And I'm not a Daniel Jones truther by any means.
Sure. I understand, but that's a hard narrative for me to buy into for a guy who just hasn't been able to. I mean, he's lost the ball. He's got 32 career fumbles, Mitch. 32 career fumbles and 22 career interceptions. And he's played in 30 games. Like that, I don't know. As bad as your offensive line is, you got to hold on to the ball. So, you know, I don't know. I won't buy into that, but I'm selling with you that he's not the starter, because unless things drastically turn around for them and unless they make the playoffs really, or get, you know, narrowly close, there's no justification for bringing him back next year. Right.
So no, but can we make a call right now that they're drafting quarterback in the first round?
I mean, we're assuming now that they're going to be in a top 10 pick position. If you're at that range, you cannot pass on a quarterback. Absolutely. So,
Brock Purdy
not Purdy. I mean, right now, I, you know, the names at the top. Spencer Rattler's dropped. So Spencer, you're talking about Malik Willis, the Liberty quarterback, who's, you know, always going to have that potential, but there's going to be questions about him. Sam Howell has disappointed early on. Yeah. So that's, you know, kind of an interesting one. I would keep an eye on the Nevada quarterback, Carson Strong. You know, think about Matt Corral as a Zach Wilson, Joe Burrow type riser in this draft process if he continues to ball out for Ole Miss, as we mentioned before. And even to Jacob Hayner, the Fresno State quarterback. So, you know,
Hayner's played really well.
Played very well. If he has that Fresno State team well at the end of the season, he could see himself up there. But yeah, I mean, if they're going to be in a top 10 pick with Daniel Jones as the quarterback, as a full starter, I mean, you have no justification for bringing him back and not giving the job to somebody else to see what you could do. So far this year, Mitch, they're 0-3. He's got 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. You know, they just have not been able to score the ball. And it's just, I mean, it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle. And honestly, they haven't played really tough teams. I mean, they played Denver, who has started 3-0, but you know, it's not like Denver's a world beater. This is early in the season. They lost by a point to the Washington football team, and then they lose to Atlanta. I mean, geez, if you were going to win some games this year, these are some of the games you have to win. So tough start for the Giants.
Yeah, real tough.
All right, Mitch, the next game up here, the Saints and the Patriots. Mitch, this is, what an interesting start. What an interesting year so far for the New Orleans Saints. They blow out the Packers on opening night. They get throttled by the Panthers in week 2, and then they come back here week 3 and handle Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots on the road like it was nothing. 28-13, the Saints get a win. Mitch, buy or sell Jameis Winston is a good enough quarterback to get the Saints to the playoffs this year?
Nah, I'm selling.
You're selling.
I'm selling. And it's not because, let me preface this by saying that Jameis has done a lot to improve his game, right? He's more efficient. We haven't seen him throw a whole hell of a lot of yardage, right? But he's efficient in what he throws and everything, and that's great. But when you're in the same division as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and a red hot Carolina Panthers that you and I are both hot on, no, he's not good enough to get him there, because I don't think that he can beat the Panthers or the Bucks enough to get there. I don't think that he could do that, because I think that's what that's going to come down to. Even if they win 10 games, right? They're 10-7. I don't think that he can beat the Panthers enough or the Bucks enough to get to there. So he's made a lot of improvement. I think he looks a lot better than he did during his tenure in Tampa Bay. But no, I don't think that he's good enough to get the job done in New Orleans.
You know, Mitch, I kind of just want to hold on this one. Like I'm kind of like indifferent. I think they're just going to win 8 or 9 games this year. I told you before, I think they're going to win and lose games alternately throughout their entire course of the season. They're going to win one, lose one. It just seems how it's been. They were up in week 1, down in week 2, up in week 1. I think they're going to be down this week. Like, it's just how it goes. And that's how Jameis has been. He's never attempted more than 22 passes in a game yet this season. So, you know, he's got 60 attempts on the year, 63 attempts on the year through 3 games, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. The only reason why he has 7 touchdowns is that week 1 game where he completed 14 passes and 5 of them were touchdowns. So besides like one fluke game, it's been, you know, okay. And they basically haven't used him at all. And if that's the, you know, if that's how you're using Jameis Winston to win games, then that's not a playoff caliber quarterback. You know, if you can't trust him to touch the ball 25 times in a game, right? Like, how can you say that that's a playoff caliber quarterback? So, you know, at the same time, I could see them winning 9 or 10 games and getting to the playoffs and Jameis just continuing to do this. So I am going to just not answer the question and push and just kind of hold in the middle. So I'm copping out. That's what I'm doing, Mitch.
That's not what the question is, Dallin.
I know. We wrote the question down and I decided that I just don't want to answer because I think they're going to go 9-8 and he's going to be good and bad. So both. He's buying and selling.
This is America. You can do whatever you want.
And it's our podcast, right? So who's going to tell me no? Mitch, Chargers and Chiefs. And one of the biggest surprises this week as the Chargers get the win on the road over the Kansas City Chiefs, 30-24. Kansas City struggling in this game, struggling with turnovers. A lot of turnovers for the Chiefs on Sunday. 4 turnovers to be exact. Mitch, this was the team that was most mentioned to us in our question about the biggest surprises. Both are all of Austin, Tanner, and Garrett, and we appreciate you guys for participating, mentioned the Chiefs' early season struggles as one of the biggest surprises. Buy or sell, is everything fine in Kansas City? Should we be worried about the Chiefs as we've known them?
No, don't be worried about the Chiefs. Don't be worried about the Chiefs. So I guess I don't know how you buy or sell that.
You're buying everything is fine.
I'm buying everything is fine. I'm buying everything is fine. No, don't be worried about them. I think that Las Vegas team is very for real. I think that Vegas team is good. Don't get too worried. By the way, Andy Reid had some health issues right after the game. Glad to hear that he's going to be okay, that everything is savvy with him.
He was back at practice today on Tuesday. So glad to hear everything's like okay with him.
Yeah. Sounded like just a case of dehydration and everything. So
precautionary more or less, but
yeah, they're fine. They're fine.
I'm with you, Mitch. I'm buying that everything is fine in Kansas City. Nobody has played a tougher start of the season than the Kansas City Chiefs. Start the season with the Cleveland Browns, who we all expect to be AFC contenders this year, at the Baltimore Ravens, also expected to be an AFC contender this year. And then you've got the Los Angeles Chargers, who is clearly an up-and-coming team and a legitimate playoff contender themselves. So, no, I'm not worried that the Chiefs went 1-2 in these games, Mitch. And I'm also not worried because they lost one game on a Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumble in a game where they had possession of the ball moving down the field. If they don't fumble it, they kick a field goal and win the game. And then they lose in a game where they had 4 turnovers. They were -4 in the turnover margin, and they lost by 6 points. So if you 2 less turnovers, you win that game. So no, I'm not worried about the Chiefs. It's been ugly to start. Turnovers is a clear issue. The defense
is bad.
Is a clear issue. But for the long term of this team, it's not going to be a worry. I'm with you, though, and I'm glad you brought up the Raiders in this, because that is the one caveat to this, is the Kansas City Chiefs are fine as far as playoffs and being a legit contender, but the AFC West might be a debate this year. You know, you've already lost 2 games. If Vegas stays on the hot pace and gets to 13-4, you know, you're like, as far as the Chiefs go, I mean, we're like, there is potential now that this division could be up for grabs. I don't think that changes whether Kansas City is a wild card team or not. Doesn't change them in my mind as a Super Bowl contender, but the regular season record might not be as great as we expected, and it might open the door for a red hot Raiders team or even the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders are red hot, and like you said, they could maintain that pace, but let's not throw the 13-4 number out there for him, for me at least. I mean, like, let's be honest. For me right now, this is still Kansas City's division to lose.
Of course.
Even when they are 4th in the division right now, because I don't think that Broncos team is that good. And I think that the Raiders are – well, we'll get to the Raiders. But, you know, I don't think that they get that. And I don't think they're a 13-win team. But you know, yeah, everything's fine in Kansas City. Everything's fine. You know, the building's not burning down, so we're okay.
Yeah, don't panic. I think they're going to be all right. Mitch, let's pause for a quick break here. Let's hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we're going to continue to break down week 3 with our buy and sell segment. So stick around and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. Second half of the week 3 recap / buy or sell segment that we have going on. Dallin, let's get into that matchup we had down in the swamps of Jacksonville.
Yes, the swamps of Jacksonville are pretty dry right now in the Urban Meyer era, Mitch. 0-3 for the Jags as they were handled by the Arizona Cardinals, 31-19. I mean, besides an incredible 109-yard field goal return for a touchdown by Jamal Agnew at the end of the first half, it was another lackluster performance for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's where we want to focus here. Obviously, Arizona, 3-0 start, sort of alluded to them earlier as a team that last year, maybe a year early on this year, the early returns for the Cardinals are A+. 3-0, they're looking solid, more to prove for them. But we want to focus on Jacksonville here. Buy or sell Urban Meyer as an NFL head coach? I mean, it's 3 games. Keep that in mind. What are you buying or selling Urban Meyer?
I'm selling Urban Meyer. And look, we said this before the pod, or I said this to you at least before the pod. This is one of the greatest college head coaches of our generation. What he did at Florida, what he did at Ohio State, is nothing short of exceptional. But there are a lot of instances in NFL history and football history where guys just don't translate well from college to the NFL. Nick Saban, who is arguably the greatest, he's the Bill Belichick of college football, didn't translate well to the NFL. Bobby Petrino, who wound up being a dirtbag anyway, and left his team high and dry halfway through a year, didn't translate well to the NFL. Pete Carroll, the first time around, didn't translate well to the NFL. Now, he did well at USC and then came back and has done his thing with the Seattle Seahawks, and that's one thing. Lane Kiffin, another example. But, you know, when you have the number one overall pick, you get the greatest quarter, you get the best quarterback in the draft. You have all the, I guess you could say there was upside in Jacksonville with kind of what they've kind of flushed out and brought in. You had at least a shot to be a 6-7 win team. That's out the window now for me when it comes to Jacksonville. They don't have a shot at that anymore. They're going to be a 4-win, 3-win team at best. And you're wasting the rookie year of the number one overall pick. You said it before the pod even started, that Trevor Lawrence, statistically speaking, is still a worse quarterback than Zach Wilson. And Zach Wilson has looked terrible.
Wilson threw 4 picks in 1 game. And it's still worse for Trevor Lawrence through the first 3 games of the season.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's been no balance in this offense. The defense has been terrible. Obviously, they're playing the Arizona Cardinals, who have a very, very good offense. But, you know, this is just the balance is not there. The nothing is going right in Jacksonville. Urban Meyer is at the root of the problem, I think. And, you know, I'm going to sell on Urban Meyer. Now, he could change my mind in the coming weeks, but for right now, I got to sell on him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously selling on Urban Meyer early. And early, too, again, 3 games. Things can change still the first year. But This is not the start you wanted if you were Jacksonville. It's not the start you wanted if you were Urban Meyer in this new era, as you're proving that you can exist in the NFL with how successful you were at the other level. And it's not showing well to start. And on top of that, you've had horrible quarterback play from the number one overall pick, a guy who was a generational prospect, you know, mentioned with the likes of John Elway and Peyton Manning as some of the best, you know, college quarterback prospects we've ever seen. And Peyton Manning also had a very bad rookie year. Okay. It's not to say that Trevor Lawrence is going to be Ryan Leaf, but this is certainly not the start you wanted. And it's just the overall just lack of anything good. The offense has been bad. The defense has been bad. Nothing's been good. They haven't been close in any of their games, Mitch. They've lost by double digits in all three of their games. So there's just not a lot to take away from this team and to be excited about moving forward. And that's the most frustrating thing is, through three games, even 0-3, you should be able to look at your team and say, not a lot going right, but this is good, or this is working, or there's potential here. I don't really take anything from what the Jags have done so far and get excited about what the rest of it could look over the season. So, no. Yeah, I mean, I'm selling.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, cool. You have one of the best return men in all of football in Jamal Agnew. Like, you know, he had that kick return, and now he has the 109 kick six, the coveted kick six. But, you know, yeah, nothing to get excited about in Jacksonville.
It's a tough start for the Jags down in the swamps of Jacksonville. Mitch, let's move on to the next game here. Ravens and the Lions in a thrilling finish. The Ravens survive against Detroit to get to 2-1. On the leg of their best player, Justin Tucker. And Mitch, this is the segment of our buy and sell for this game. Mitch, buy or sell Justin Tucker is the best player in the NFL. And I mean that seriously. Like, I'm not just joking here. Name me a guy who's better at his job at the highest degree in the NFL. I mean...
Look, when you bring it down, when you bring it
the case,
when you break it down to what's a wide receiver supposed to do, what's a quarterback supposed to do, what's a running back, a linebacker, an offensive lineman, a kicker supposed to do, is there anyone better than Justin Tucker at his given trade? No. But that doesn't make him the best player in the NFL. That doesn't make him the best player in the NFL. He could be the greatest kicker of all time. That doesn't make him the best player in the NFL. And you know I'm for the brand. I was a special team. I was a long snapper. I was a fullback, a linebacker, and a long snapper. I am for the brand. I love special teamers. Kickers are people too. But I cannot get on board with labeling a kicker as the best player in the NFL. I just can't do it. I love Justin Tucker. I think he's the best at his position, and I think he'll be one of the all-time greats at his position when it's all said and done. He'll be right up there with Vinatieri. He'll be right up there with Morton Anderson. He'll be right up there with the best of them, but he won't ever be the best player in the NFL, and I can see the look on your face. Make the case, my friend.
I just am having fun. Here's the thing, Mitch. Ravens get the win 19-17. Justin Tucker accounted for 13 of the 17 points, four field goals and an extra point of the 19 points, excuse me. And he wins the game on an NFL record 66-yard field goal. There's not a single player in the NFL who could have hit that kick other than Justin Tucker, and you can't tell me otherwise. And for that reason, if no one else could do what you do,
No.
Listen. Obviously, he's not the best player in the NFL, but I think that we should legitimately be talking about Justin Tucker as like a top 10 player in the league. I'm serious about that.
Oh, stop it.
I'm serious about that.
Oh, stop it.
He is that good. Nobody, he just hit an NFL record 66-yard field goal, and I'm like not even surprised about it because it's not the first time he's boomed a game-winning kick like that.
He can't do what anyone else does in the league.
He kicks. Just,
that's great. And I know. I just
you don't
made
like short this. People. That's your thing. He's not athletic, and therefore.
No, that's not what I said at all. What I said was he could be the greatest at his position at all time, and that's fantastic. And he could be the next time we do an NFL 100, he could be the greatest kicker that we put up there, right? Adam Vinatieri was just that for the NFL 100. When we do NFL 200, he could be that. But Justin Tucker will never be the greatest. Well, he won't even crack the top 50. Maybe not even the top 100.
That's wrong.
Players.
That's wrong. That's all I'm saying. That's wrong. Because that right there was incredible. Nobody else in the league could do that. Even kickers. Even other kickers. All right. So, anywho, Justin Tucker's the GOAT. It is what it is.
Justin Tucker's the GOAT. So, Nate Peterman? What about Nathan Peterman?
Nathan Peterman couldn't make a 66-yard field goal. That's
no, he couldn't.
Sure.
He couldn't. I guess Justin Tucker's a new GOAT. Sorry.
You know, it's just that was just so fun. And what a heartbreak for Detroit, who, I think it was 5 years ago, 2015, Justin Tucker kicks a 61-yard field goal in Detroit to beat the Lions. Like, it's happened to them before by the same guy in the same team with a long kick. And this time it's a record breaker. Just incredible stuff from Justin Tucker here. Mitch, let's move on to the Dolphins and the Raiders. The Raiders, one of five teams in the NFL to get off to a 3-0 start. It took overtime in this one, but they survived against Miami. In Jacoby Brissett, 31-28. Mitch, Katie Pisseni, who commented in our Instagram, mentioned the Raiders.
Wife of the Italian Stallion.
Of the Italian Stallion, Tanner Pisseni, mentioned Las Vegas getting off to 3-0 start as the biggest surprise of the NFL season for her. I would have to agree with Katie 100%. This is definitely one of the biggest surprises for me. Mitch, are we buying Vegas as a legitimate playoff contender? Are they for real?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. What else is there to do?
This team is good. Like, they are good. Now, look, we just talked about the Chiefs, and I said that they're last, and it's still their division to lose, right? And I kind of chuckled a little bit when you said, you know, what if they go 13-4? Yeah, they're not going 13-4. But what if this team goes 11-6 and they get in at that wild card spot? That's a sneaky wild card because this defense has gotten leaps and bounds better. John Gruden has the offense clicking. Derek Carr looking like an MVP candidate with the way that he's playing. A Pro Bowler. Even without Josh Jacobs, yeah, this team is for real. They're legit. We look back at this game, and this is where our new award segment is going to come up. Our incompetent coach of the week is going to come up. Well, Brian Flores will crack into this. He's our incompetent coach of the week. This game started off extremely slow for the Raiders, right? They got done 14-0. Derek Carr did not look good. They were getting to Derek Carr. Jalen Phillips, by the way, looked extremely good in this game. The guy out of Miami.
Yeah, rookie defensive end.
Transferred from UCLA, went to Miami, the rookie D-end for the Miami Dolphins. It looked fantastic, and they were getting to Derek Carr, and they were giving him no time to throw the ball. Then the Raiders punt the ball, and they're inside the one. Dolphins are pinned inside the one. Here's where the incompetency comes from. Why in the hell, inside the one, would you call a wide receiver screen with a defense that secondary has played red hot secondary, and you call a wide receiver screen inside the 1 yard? It doesn't even matter if you're playing against the worst secondary in the league. Why would you call a wide receiver screen inside the 1 yard line? They get the safety. And I remember watching that play and going, this is the momentum changer. This is where the momentum changes. They're still down 14-2 at this point, but this is where this changes. Because from that point, they score 19 unanswered points. They go to overtime. They fight a good Miami defense, a good Miami team, and they go ahead and kick a field goal and win the game in overtime. This Raiders team is sneaky good. Brian Flores made an absolute blunder there. And you know, I'm going to pin it on Brian Flores. It could have been the offensive coordinator's call, but I'm going to pin it on Brian Flores because he's the head coach. You cannot call that play in that situation. This Raiders team is legit.
Yeah, that's a bad call there. And I mean, you broke it down great there, the momentum of the game. I mean, it starts off with a pick six by Derek Carr, returned 85 yards by Alandon Roberts, just 6 minutes left in the first quarter. So Miami had that momentum. And, you know, you look at this Raiders team, which did battle back to win this game ultimately on a time expiring field goal by Daniel Carlson in the end of overtime. But it didn't have to be this close, and it shouldn't have been this close against a team that was starting Jacoby Brissett. I mean, you look at the offensive stats, Vegas had just under 500 total yards, 497 to 330. So, I mean, you outgained this team by 170 yards. It shouldn't have been this close, but an average team or a not good team finds a way to lose this game. The Raiders found a way to win this game. And I think that's very indicative of maybe the path of this season for them. In the past, maybe you let these games fall away and you look back at some of those disappointing losses that kept you out of the playoffs, and this might be on the resume. Now it turns into a gritty win and, you know, another notch in the win column for the Raiders. So yeah, I'm buying them as a legitimate contender, as we talked about before. I'm not saying they're winning the division, but the playoffs, they should be right there. And I think they could compete for the division. It's going to depend for the Raiders, Mitch, how they play in the AFC West. Six games in the AFC West are going to be key. The two against the Chiefs, obviously, but really the two against the Chargers. I think whoever can come out of those two games, if one of those teams can steal those two games against the other, they're going to put themselves in a position to make the wild card and be that playoff team from the AFC West. So that's what I'm looking for if I'm the Raiders, but a solid win. And yes, I agree. They are contenders.
Yeah, they have definitely, they've played against the Broncos really well over the last couple of years. The Chargers, they have not. And they've always, in the last couple of years, I'm pretty sure they've split with the Chiefs like two out of the last 3 years. So like, they play that team tough. Really good start for the Raiders. By the way, last time the Raiders started 3-0, 2002, that was their Super Bowl run when they went and played the Buccaneers and got absolutely embarrassed by their now head coach, John Gruden. So let's keep that in mind moving forward with the Raiders.
Perhaps good mojo for the Raiders this season. Mitch, let's go to the next game. Another rookie quarterback struggling early in this season. Zach Wilson and the Jets go to Mile High and get shut out 26-0. The Broncos, meanwhile, 3-0 to start their season. One of five teams, 3-0, tied for the division lead in the AFC West with the Raiders, who we just talked about. We asked the question, are they legit contenders? And we're going to ask the same question of the Broncos here, Mitch. Are the Broncos legitimate playoff contenders? And I want to start this one off.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, no, they're not. They're not. And there's a lot of reasons. The defense is the Broncos defense. It's very, very good. The offense is playing well because the defense is playing well. Teddy Bridgewater is doing enough and they're winning games, but they are 3-0 against the New York Giants, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the New York Jets. So call me in like 4 weeks when they've actually played good teams. You know, if they're 7-3 or 6-4 in a couple weeks, then okay, maybe, you know, all right, they're sort of surviving, but they've had an incredibly easy stretch. Their defense has given up 13 points a game, 0 points a game. And they've got it done against the teams you should beat. That is great. How are you going to look against the Ravens this week? Steelers, Raiders, Browns, Washington, Dallas. That's the next six games there. How do you look after those six games?
How are you looking against that kind of competition? That's what I want to see about the Broncos. So I am selling them as playoff contenders until they play anybody good.
Yeah, I mean, they're not that good. I'm selling. Their next four games: Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Las Vegas, Cleveland. That's the test. If you're a Broncos fan and you're all in on the Broncos, watch the next four games, because I think the actual true colors of the Denver Broncos will be shown in that, and they'll be 3-4, because I don't think they beat the Steelers. Honestly, I think the Steelers might even be better than the Broncos.
I'd agree. I would agree with that. And here's that's the Broncos defense is good. And I think the Broncos defense will be good throughout the season, but like, they have not played a good defense. The Jets defense is okay. The Giants defense is bad. And the Jags defense is bad. So like, the offense hasn't got tested. Can they win a 17-14 game against a playoff contender? Can they slow down a high powered offense like the Ravens or the Raiders or the Browns or the Cowboys, who they have later on?
The Raiders are the number one offense in football. You can't, like, how are you
going to be able to beat them 17-15? So that's going to be the question about the Broncos. So too early to tell on the Broncos. Great for them winning three games to start the season against teams you should beat. No discredit to what they've done to start, but we are waiting till they play some good teams, and we'll see how they look. Call me in November when they've gotten through a tougher slate and we see what their record is.
And by the way, big ups to Teddy Bridgewater. He's taken a pretty bad team and gone 3-0 with him. Like, we give all the credit to the defense here, but let's give some credit to Teddy Bridgewater. He's played pretty well.
I mean, he's been put in a position to succeed, and he's executed at a high level. And that's all you could ask for. And that's what Teddy Bridgewater will do for you so well. This team, if this is what it looks like for the season, they're a legit team, because if this is all you're asking Teddy to do, he can succeed at that. When the team needs to be lifted and you need a quarterback to lift the talent around him, that's where Teddy's going to fall short. If they find themselves in that position, that's when you'll start to see the struggles that we saw last year in Carolina and at times earlier in his career. So, Mitch, let's get to what we deemed the game of the week, and it was a pretty good one. A very defining win for the Los Angeles Rams, who get it done over the defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers 34-24. Rams start off 3-0. I said this going into this game, that the Rams were going to win and make a statement that they are the best team in the NFC. So Mitch, they've got the win. Buy or sell, Rams are the team to beat in the conference.
God, this might be the toughest question we've had so far, because I'm still a big believer in the Bucs. I'm a big believer in the Seahawks.
It's a good conference.
It's a great conference.
Packers.
I mean, God, it looks good. I want to say yes, and I'm gonna pull a Dallin graph here, and I'm gonna hold because here's
you're
the deal.
Allowed because I already did it. So it's
so here's the deal: is when you see Tom Brady with his elbows on his knees and his head down and his hands together, like he's thinking and he's plotting, that's when you know you're in trouble. Because Tom Brady has, we've seen that plenty of times with Tom Brady, and he knows exactly what he wants to do. That Buccaneers team is so good. And Tom Brady, I can't believe I'm talking this way about Tom Brady with as much as I've trashed him on this podcast, but Tom Brady is so freaking good at his age. He will find a way. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Matt Stafford and the offense they have over there, the defense they have over there, Sean McVay and everything they've put together. They're a fantastic team, but I can't buy 100% in on the Rams as the team to beat in the NFC, because that bad man, Tom Brady, is over there in Tampa Bay, and he's plotting a way to get back at the Los Angeles Rams when they probably see each other in the NFC championship game. So I'm going to hold on that until the NFC championship game. It's going to be a season long hold, because
until Tom Brady gets a rematch.
I have a good feeling. Cause I know I'd pick the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl, but I have a good feeling that we're going to see this matchup in the playoffs at some point.
I mean, it seems likely. I am buying that the Rams are the team to beat in the NFC. And I was high on the Rams going into the season. I have been throughout the offseason after the addition of Matthew Stafford. I just thought it was going to unlock this team, and it has. I mean, it really has. You've watched them through the first 3 weeks, and they just seem like, it's like
Sean McVay looks like a kid in a candy store who got to try three of the flavors of jelly beans and then just got told, here's all 120 other flavors. You can have them all now. And he's like, oh my, what do? I don't have to only run play action with Jared Goff. I like a mesh routes across, you know, I could air it out downfield. I could do this. Everything is at his disposal. And this Rams team has just looked legit in the first 3 weeks. The defense is anchored by two stars on the defensive line in the secondary, and an incredible offense. They can run the ball. They can pass the ball. They can do everything. I think the Rams are the real package. And my issue with the Bucks, Mitch, is not that they're not legit. They're clearly a contender, but they cannot run the ball. I mean, for as good as this offensive line is, and it's a very good offensive line, it's amazing how bad they are at running the ball. And that's a concern for me because, as we saw with the Bills last year, who were a great regular season team, if you are too one-dimensional, come playoffs, somebody can stop you doing one thing, you're done. It's over. You can't do anything. And my fear with this Bucks team, and we're already seeing it, 55 pass attempts for Tom Brady in this game. He's thrown the ball a lot to start the season. That's not a good sign for the Bucks. Not early. Tom Brady's like 50 years old. You don't want him throwing the ball this much early. And if he's throwing the ball this much, that means you can't run the ball. And you need to have a solid run game to help your veteran quarterback who needs to be ready come playoffs and rested and healthy. So that is a concern for me early on in the Bucs season. Now, again, still going to be a playoff team, like still going to be a contender. But there are some holes in this team that I'm looking at and a little worried about. And the Rams have shown no holes for me so far.
I mean, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp looking like Tom Brady and Randy Moss from the year 7.
Cooper Kupp is on one. And you mentioned Randy Moss. He's like the first player since Randy Moss to start the season. I think it was 350 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns. Yep. First player since Moss with the Patriots to do that. So, yeah, I mean, it's exactly what he looks like. It's exciting times in L.A. And Bucks still a solid team, still the favorite of the NFC South. The Rams look legit, though. I will say that. Rams look legit, Mitch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Let's move on to keep it in the NFC West here, Mitch, because this was your NFC champion in your preseason predictions, the Seattle Seahawks, but they fell short against the Minnesota Vikings this week, 30-17. No Dalvin Cook, but Alexander Mattison did a great Dalvin Cook impression, 26-112. Kirk Cousins has been dealing early on in this season, and it finally translated in a win for Minnesota as the defense really stepped up in this game. First good game for the Minnesota Vikings defense, and this Seattle team. Early struggles for the Seahawks, Mitch, as they begin the season 1-2. You had them going to the Super Bowl in your preseason predictions. Mitch, should we be, by yourself, should we be worried about the Seahawks?
I am.
Yeah, you are.
I picked them to go to the Super Bowl.
I'll tell you what, my parents are. My dad texts me on Sunday. He's like, we're not going to win a game. He's like, we're going to win 5 games this year. I'm like, all right, like, geez, pump the brakes here. I know, like, you guys make the playoffs every year, you know?
This will be a playoff team, and they'll be competitive in the playoffs. But yeah, I'm worried.
Worried about them as a Super Bowl contender, right? That's the context. Because again, I'm with you that I think for the playoffs, even 9 or 10 wins, like they can make the playoffs as a wild card. I'm not ruling them out for that. But Super Bowl contender, legitimate team, I'm worried too.
Yeah, I really am. I mean, you know, they have the guys they can throw to. Russell Wilson still finding his guys, DK Metcalf. He found a good, solid target in Gerald Everett. But when he can't find Tyler Lockett, that raises some eyebrows. And that, like, pricks my ears up a little bit. I'm like, oh, he can't find really his number one guy. DK might be the wide receiver one of that offense, but Tyler Lockett's Russell Wilson's number one guy. And when he can't do that, that raises some questions. And I also just don't have a whole lot of confidence in Chris Carson as a running back. I don't like that option there. So, yeah, I'm absolutely worried. And I'm afraid that I'm going to be made look like a fool. And it's going to be the Seahawks' fault.
That's never fun. You know, the Seahawks, notoriously up and down. They do have a new offensive coordinator who comes from the Rams system. And I did expect that early on, it would be a little up and down offensively as he sort of adjusts to Russell Wilson and these playmakers, and they sort of figure out that fine balance of what it'll become. So I think the offense will come around in time. The real concern for me, Mitch, is the defense, who has given up 30 points in back-to-back games. They won early in the year, game one against the Colts, but then a 33-30 loss to the Titans, and then this 30-17 loss to the Vikings.
They give up 30 to the Vikings.
The defense has to be better than this, Mitch. That that division is just too good. You are going to play six games against some of the best offenses in the league. An incredible rushing offense with the Niners. You know, we just talked about the Rams and how good they are, and the Cardinals with what they've looked like this year. So you've got six games where, what, you're going to outscore those teams in six games? There's just no way. That cannot be the game plan. The defense has to be better than that. And when you have to play that many games against a tough division, that is just, it's a tough slate. So the defense has got to get better. The offense has got to gel. I'm not selling on them being a playoff team, but right now I am worried. I'm buying that I'm worried, and they've got to turn things around quick because they've got the Niners and the Rams in back-to-back weeks. So you cannot start the season 1-4. You cannot start the season 1-4. You're going to be in a very bad spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mitch, Sunday Night Football this week, Green Bay at the Niners. What a fantastic game. Back and forth, the Niners score a touchdown. Jimmy G leads them down the field in 2 minutes, scores with 37 seconds left to take a 1-point lead. And Mitch, that was enough time for the bad man, Aaron Rodgers. 37 seconds, he leads them into field goal range. Mason Crosby kicks the 51-yarder to win it. Mitch, buy or sell? 20 seconds is too much time to leave Aaron Rodgers at the end of the game when the game's on the line.
Look, I had a runner-up for incompetent coach of the week, and it was Kyle Shanahan, okay? I just want to point that out. Yes, it's too much. Aaron Rodgers does exactly what Tom Brady does, which is if you give him any time at all to do anything, he will make it happen in a one-score game. Caveat, in a one-score game. Yes, 20 seconds is too much. 37 is way too much. That's almost double what we're talking about here. Yeah, if you give him more than 20 seconds, it is too much. It is way too much. Aaron Rodgers will go down the field. He will score on you, and he'll make you pay. He'll make you pay. You don't think Aaron Rodgers is on a mission right now to go out on Green Bay as a champion, and you're going to give him almost 40 seconds to go down there and try to beat you in a game? You damn well better be scared that he's going to do it, because he will. He will. This is if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that I even gave Aaron Rodgers any time at all. Don't give him any time at all. Don't do it. Because he will absolutely eviscerate you when the time comes. Yes, absolutely buying this. 20 seconds is way too much, let alone 37.
I think like 10 seconds might be too much. Like,
that's a stretch.
Here's the thing, Mitch. They had the ball and the ability to like
run down the Hail Mary.
They had the ability to like run down the clock and try to just hold for a final field goal. Like, or I guess the field goal wouldn't have done it. They had to get a touchdown. They were down six. I take that back. But yet it's a hard balance. It's a hard balance. Okay. I don't want to like blame Kyle Shanahan.
The situation allows for a different thing, but
you scored a touchdown to take the lead in the last minute of the game. Can't be mad about that. But man, 30 seconds is too much. 20 seconds is too much. Aaron Rodgers is just going to get it done. And I will say this for the Niners. I don't think this is a bad loss. They're 2-1 on the season, won two, not very impressive games against the Lions and the Eagles to start. But in this game, which was a loss, I was very impressed. They were down 17-7 at halftime. They had no run game, just 67 yards on the ground for the night, which is what the Niners do. And they still were able to overcome a 17-7 deficit to take that 28-27 lead with 37 seconds left in the game. So if you're the Niners, I think there's some positives to take out of this. The Packers are obviously a very good team, and you got beat by one of the best with no time left on the clock.
It's weird to ask this question because we know what the obvious answer is, right? Would you rather give yourself two shots at the end zone with no time left to spare, or would you rather score and go up two and give the other quarterback 30 seconds to work with? That situation is, it's obvious that you just take the, you just score,
right?
With the exception of the fact
defense.
And hope your defense plays well enough, with the exception of the fact that you're playing Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady.
Right.
Like, it seems weird to even ask that question, but that's where we're at with this is like, yeah, you can do that in any other circumstance except for when you're playing Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, because yeah, they'll make you pay for it.
Except for when number 12's on the other side of the ball, right?
Literally, then, number 12. Like, literally, then, number
then you,
12.
Then you might need to worry about it. I'm right there with you, Mitch. Final game this week in our recap, the Monday night game from last night, Philly and Dallas. Dallas with a big win, 41-21. Mitch, in my mind, I'm gonna say this is a statement win for the Cowboys early on in this season. And we're gonna focus this buy or sell around this division. Because I think this was a statement that the Cowboys are by and far the class of this division. So similarly to what we asked about the Tennessee Titans in the AFC South, buy or sell that Dallas is the team to beat in the NFC East.
Well, we know the Giants are no good. We have just said that we're a year too early on the football team. The Eagles are very hot and cold. You never know what team you're going to get week in, week out.
Surprisingly competitive.
But the Cowboys, like, even in their losses, looked halfway decent. Dak Prescott's back and healthy. They have a two-headed monster in the backfield with Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. They have a lot of their defense back. They just dominated what is considered the second best team in that division probably right now. Yeah, they are. They for me, Dallas is a lock. And I'm going against everything I had in my NFL predictions when I said the football team was going to win this division. Dallas might be a lock to win this division.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I had Dallas winning this division. I was just a little lower on Washington going into the season because of the quarterback, and I didn't really buy into Fitzpatrick all that much. But I think early on, it's just clear that Dallas is by and far a better team than the other three. And maybe that changes by the end of the season. But right now, it's safe to say that this is the Cowboys division to lose. We already talked about Washington here. For Philly, like I mentioned, surprisingly competitive, right? Lost a weird 17-11 game to the 49ers last week. Won their first game of the season against the Atlanta Falcons, 32-6. Impressive, but Falcons, not impressive. This was an opportunity for the Eagles to make a statement and say, hey, like, you know, we're going to be around this year. And they lost 21-41. So I don't think anyone's coming close to Dallas this year. Dallas has the control over this division. And to me is the clear favorite and should be throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right, Mitch, that's it for our NFL week 3 recap. Fun to kind of look at every game, some of the bigger storylines early on in the season. And again, we appreciate those who participated on Instagram with our question there. And if you don't already, again, follow us there at the Sports Hour Guys. You can also leave us a voice message on Anchor and interact with us there. Mitch, before we wrap up the podcast with our quick picks, we want to just take a quick dive and look into the MLB postseason, as we are just a few games away from the end of the regular season here and about to start this postseason run. Just wanted to kind of take a look at who's in, who's competing, how we think those races will ultimately play out, and who we are buying going into this
postseason run. So let's start in the American League, Mitch. AL East wrapped up with the Tampa Bay Rays, 97 wins on the season for them. The Central will only be represented by one team. That's the Chicago White Sox, 89 wins for them right now, already locked in with the division lead and the win there. Three teams in the AL West are still competing. Houston's got a 4.5 game lead as of right now, should likely wrap up the division lead. Astros, 91 wins. Behind them, Seattle Mariners, 87 wins. Oakland A's, 87 wins, both competing in the wild card. The leaders in the wild card right now, though, Mitch, and likely where this wild card race, these final two spots will end up, is the AL East. Yankees, 89 wins. Boston, 88, game and a half back of them. And then just half a game behind the Red Sox are the Toronto Blue Jays at 87 wins. So, Mitch, you know, Rays, White Sox, Houston, Astros, pencil those three teams in to the AL postseason. It's really kind of come down to those five teams I mentioned in the wild card. What are your thoughts on this? Obviously, your A's involved in this still holding on to hope. How do you think this is going to play out?
I'm done with the A's. I'm done with the A's. Like, I'll always be an A's fan. But, you know, last time we did this, last time we tried to make a big move here, we made the move for Starling Marte this year. And we just needed that extra bat to get us there. Rotation's good. We'll get the extra bat. 2014, yeah, trade Yoenis Cespedes. We'll get John Lester. We'll go out there. We'll make a run with the pitching. That's what we'll do. God damn it. That's the key to victory. But no, we're not going to do it again. We're going to make some dumb moves and we're going to set ourselves back another couple years. And you know what? We're just going to be perennial wild cards. That's it. I'm done with this. Every year I sell myself on this stupid team. And we think that we're going to get it done, and we don't get it done. I just want one year where we get into the postseason outright without a wild card game. One time, please. Screw the Houston Astros. One time. One time. That's all I want. That's all I want. Yes, it's set the way it is. It's going to be Chicago, Houston, Boston, New York, and Tampa Bay. That's it. It's set the way it is. Seattle might have a way in, but I don't even really care because Oakland's not even in there. Damn it!
Man, that's depressing, Mitch. I'm sorry for you, my friend. It's you know, it's a tough spot. The A's are always in, as I've mentioned before on this, the power structure in the MLB, the payroll just never makes sense to me. And it just puts teams like the Oakland A's at a clear disadvantage over others. And many of the teams they're competing with here in the wild card, like New York and like Boston. So, you know,
I just realized my window was open and I probably disturbed all my neighbors. So I had to close my window. Sorry about that.
Well, now they know your passion about the Oakland A's, Mitch. I'm going to say Yankees game and a half up for the first spot in the wild card. I'm going to say they're safe. It's going to come down to Boston or Toronto, just a half a game split here. I think one of those teams, but it's going to be from the, AL East. Just a real quick look, I guess, at the from the league as a whole, who's maybe your favorite to come out of the AL this year?
Man, I like that Tampa Bay team. I really do like that Tampa Bay team. I think they can make another run here. Chicago's got the pitching. I don't understand why people talked so down about the Yankees. The Yankees are garbage. The Yankees are garbage.
I mean, they started off the season very rough. It was not good. I mean, we talked about it on this podcast how bad it was for them early on. I mean, they've really turned a corner.
I mean, but they were never like that far around 500. Like when you talk about bad teams, they're below 500. The Yankees never really were that far below. They're not that bad of a team. Even from the beginning of the year, like I guess maybe by Yankee standards, yeah, they were bad, but that Yankees team could make a run. But I think I got to take Tampa Bay out of this bunch. This is a very well-run team. Maybe not the marquee names that we like to see, but you know, Tampa Bay's got a good ball club over there. I really like them.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to,
if I was going to pick a favorite out of the AL, I'm going to go with.
Whoa, we got a mic down.
Whoa, wow.
TikTok. We're just going to edit all
TikTok.
This out.
No, TikTok moment. That's what
this
that
is not staying in the podcast. Okay. I don't know why my lamp decided to fall over, but that's okay. Just it was sick and tired of the podcast. It was like, bro, get the hell out of here. Okay. You know, if I was going to pick a favorite in the AL, Mitch, I think I'm going to go with the Astros. I think the Astros would be my favorite. 91 wins, second in the AL this year. They're just always a solid team. I just have a feeling. I don't know. I guess the way that I look at this is I don't feel like in this 5-year run for the Astros, they're only going to make one World Series. I think they're going to make two. Maybe they don't win two, but they're going to make two. So seems like a year that's open for them. I know the Rays have been just as good as they were last year, but they did lose some big arms, namely Blake Snell, to the Padres in the offseason. That might come to hurt them come postseason time. And you know, they will face off against the top wildcard team, right? So White Sox, Houston will play, but they might get the Yankees. And a red hot Yankees team is no easy task, even if they are quote unquote wild card. So don't rule out the Rays even making out of the first round on my thoughts here. So I'm going to go the Astros. I'm going to go the Astros for the AL, okay. Mitch. Okay. Let's focus over on the NL here. The teams that are locked in the NL West, it's the top two teams there. The Giants, best team in Major League Baseball all season, 102 wins. Dodgers behind them at 100 wins, two games back. Technically still in the division race, but it's not looking good. The fact that the Dodgers are going to win 100 games, Mitch, and have to go play like the freaking St. Louis Cardinals in a wild card game is ridiculous. But anyway, I digress. Those two teams are making the playoffs. The Brewers locked into the NL Central.
Are you calling for a playoff reform in the MLB?
What?
Are you calling for playoff reform in the MLB?
I have been. I loved the expansion last year. They should expand it even more. Yes, 100%, Mitch.
Okay.
If you win 100 games, you should not be put into a situation where you have a one game shot at your playoff life. That makes no sense to me. You did way too much in the regular season to deserve one game to determine it all. So yes, playoff reform for me.
Now you understand my Bears pain from 2018. 12-4, but yes, a wild card.
But yes, so Milwaukee, San Francisco, LA locked in. NL East still up for grabs. 2.5 games between Atlanta and the Philadelphia Phillies. They are actually playing a 3-game series right now, and then we'll have 3 games after that. So this series between those two teams could go a long way in determining the outcome, who actually wins that division. But both those teams in the race for the division, the wild card, really at this point, the Cincinnati Reds are technically in it still, but it's really going to be the St. Louis Cardinals. 87 wins right now for the Cardinals to be that second wild card team in 5.5 games ahead of the Reds there. So unless the Cardinals lose every single game they have left on the schedule, you could pencil in Dodgers, Cardinals and in the wild card.
And the Reds would have to win every game.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. So. Yeah. So really, you know, what we're looking at in the NL over the last little bit here, is the NL East, Braves, Phillies, who's going to come out there for a chance to play the Milwaukee Brewers in the first round. And get this, Mitch, right? The number one seed, the best record, plays the wild card team in the first round. So that means we're going to get Giants and Dodgers, two 100 win teams in the first round of the MLB postseason.
Yeah,
that's wild. That's why, and a division rival nonetheless. Like, holy cow, what a series, what a 5-game series that's gonna be, Mitch.
It'll be a good one. Look,
if the Dodgers get through, okay, obviously they have to win a wild card game. I'm just saying, that's gonna be fun. So let's talk about NL favorites, Mitch. Who's your team?
I think it's easy to say it's the Dodgers. I think it's easy to say it's the Giants. They had the best record. You look at that roster. There's no way in hell that team should have won 102 games. No way. They got a little red ass in them though. You know, they got a little red ass. They're a fight hard type of team. They're not a team that lays down very easy. I think that's going to be a great series when the Dodgers do ultimately beat the Cardinals, because that should be what the outcome is. I like the Brewers.
You like the Brewers. Okay. In a year where there's two clear favorites, take the third. Okay.
I mean, I like the Dodgers. I like the Giants, but why not hop on this Brewers train? Let's get Christian Yelich a ring. I mean, this guy has been one of the best players, one of the most underappreciated players in all of Major League Baseball, because he plays for an organization. He's played for two organizations that are underappreciated. He's played for the Miami Marlins that, you know, obviously go under the radar all year because no one cares about the Marlins. And then the Brewers, they're obviously like everyone, they're everyone's stepchild, right? Like when they're good, you're like, yeah, the Brewers are good, whatever, but we're going to just wave them off. Give me the Brewers. I like the Brewers, maybe. I like the Brewers, maybe.
Is the biggest endorsement I've ever heard. And here's the thing, Mitch. I love it. Brewers have won 94 games this year. So, like, it's not like, you know, they're an 87-win division champ that's going to get into the playoffs.
No, they're going to be a 95-win team.
You know, they're a solid team that's predicated on pitching. The batting, yes. The offense, tough. And Yelich, it's funny you mentioned Yelich. Only 113 games this year, 386 at-bats. He has 9 homers, and he's batting .246. And still, this is a 94-win team. Like, if you would have told me Yelich was going to have less than 10 home runs and bat less than .250, there's no way they do any good this year. So that's a scary team to go against.
Willie Adames, Rowdy Tellez, Eduardo Escobar, Dan Vogelback, a former Mariner. They got Brandon Woodruff. They got Lorenzo Cain, Freddie Peralta. I mean, this Josh Hader, the guy that had all the Twitter drama a year ago. Give me the Brewers here, man. I mean, this is a good team.
I respect this, Mitch. I respect the Brewers pick. It's absolutely wrong. But I respect that you made it.
I don't even care that it's wrong.
Because the right pick, the only pick, is the Dodgers. The Giants are regular season frauds. And I pray to God and Allah and all of them that I don't have to eat my words when the Giants and the Dodgers have to play in the playoff series. But the Giants are regular season frauds who will be exposed by the Dodgers if they get a series together. Brewers can't hit. Braves might win 85 games and win their division. I'm not scared of anybody. If the Dodgers and the Giants really face in the division, whoever wins that's going to the World Series, hands down. I don't think either of them will have a problem in the NLCS, whether it's the Brewers or the Braves or the Phillies. So I'm feeling confident my Dodgers getting to the World Series again this year, as they have in many years past. Winning it, depending on who they play, is another matter. But I feel confident about them getting there. And I have no reason not to, Mitch, because that's just what they've done. And this year's team is just as good as all the others. It's like they don't miss a beat. Another 100 wins for the Dodgers. So I can't not pick them, you know? I'd love a rematch and another shot at the freaking stinking cheating Astros. I'd love another shot to beat them legit and just rub their nose in it.
You and Grandma Patty both.
Me and Grandma Patty. Yes.
You and Mugga both would love a shot at the Astros.
So. Yes, we would. I would very much like that, Mitch. So yeah, that's it for the MLB postseason. Again, just under a week left basically on the MLB regular season, and we'll get into postseason. And as we get into that, obviously, we'll be talking about it here on the podcast. But Mitch, we have to wrap up here with our quick picks. A recap of last week, we both went 11-5 in our picks. So well done by you. Well done by me. Mitch holds a 1-game lead so far, 24-8 on the season through 2 weeks of picks, because we didn't pick week one. I am 23-9. So it's tight margins to start. Nobody's pulling away yet. Let's see how week three goes for us. Mitch, do you want to start us off?
Sure, I'll start us off. First game of the day. The Jacksonville Jaguars are leaving the swamps of Jacksonville to head up to the least desirable vacation spot in all of America, Cincinnati, to take on the Bengals. Give me the Bengals at home. I don't think Jacksonville figures this out at all. I like the Bengals.
Yeah, Bengals 2-1 to start the season. Things are looking good for Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. This is a great matchup. Number one overall picks, the one from 2021 and the one from 2020, Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence. Give me Joe Burrow, the Tiger King, and the Cincinnati Bengals getting it done at home.
Yeah. By the way, right now, Bengals -7.5. Of course, this is as of Tuesday, -7.5, -345 on the money line, and an over under of 46.
All right, Mitch, next game, Zach Wilson and the winless Jets hosting the Tennessee Titans, the favorite in the AFC South. I've been optimistic that the Jets and Zach Wilson would eventually turn it around. Through three games, it has not looked good. I'm trying a different strategy here, Mitch. I'm going to pick against them, and maybe they finally have a good week. So help in the mojo of Zach Wilson, perhaps. Give me the Titans.
Well, if you're a betting man, that would absolutely probably work with you. The Tennessee Titans right now, -7.5, -385 money line, and an over under of 46. Give me the under on the game, but give me the Titans to cover the 7.5 spread. Give me the Titans on the road, on the road. A far better team, and I don't have any faith in the Jets at all whatsoever.
How could you? Real quick, before we jump into this one, I know this is you, but is this garbage game of the week? I hate to do it to you. I know it's your team, but is this garbage game of the week?
Yeah. Mitchell, go ahead and hit it.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Yeah, we got the Detroit Lions. They're leaving the Motor City to head over to the Windy City to take on the Chicago Bears. My beloved Chicago Bears. I could be all hyped up that I want, and that doesn't change my pick. Give me the Bears. Give me the Bears at home. Bears, Dad, we're going to 2-2. Let's go.
You got to believe. I love your belief in your team, Mitch. I'm sorry to do this to you, buddy. I'm picking the Lions in this one. Bears have just been exposed, and I have a feeling they're just not going to figure it out and turn it around in 1 week. So Lions have had some competitive games. They're 0-3, but they have been close in a number of games, including last week, coming back against the Niners in week 1. So maybe they're a little more competitive than we thought. Give me the Lions in this one on the road.
Bears, by the way, right now, 3-point favorites in the spread. So -3 on the Bears. Intriguing. Over under at 42. Might want to hit the under.
Intriguing. Next matchup, Mitch. The 0-3 Indianapolis Colts headed to Miami and the beautiful beaches, Cubano food down there, to visit the 1-2 Miami Dolphins and Jacoby Brissett. Can the Colts right the ship and get the first win of the season? I say yes. Give me another road team to get the win. Colts over Dolphins.
This is my underdog lock of the week. Give me the Colts +3 on the road in Miami to go ahead and get it done against the Dolphins. Look, the Dolphins banged up. They're not going to have Tua. It sounds like. Might not have Tua. So, I like the Colts to rebound here and get to 1-3. Give me the Colts. Following that game, Cleveland, they're leaving the greatest city in Ohio to head over to Minnesota to take on the Minnesota Vikings. Give me Cleveland to go to get this game done. A far superior team. Minnesota, good win last week, but that, not expecting much out of that team. Give me Cleveland.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to take Cleveland on the road in a tight competitive game. I think this Vikings team is better than maybe you give them credit. I don't think they're maybe a winning team this year, but a competitive team, a feisty team, going to be hard to put away at times. Cleveland gets it done in a close game, maybe last second score to seal the victory, but give me the Brownies. It's going to be hard to pick against them this year.
Cleveland minus two right now. So
Cleveland minus two. All right, Mitch. Next on the slate, this one definitely a candidate for garbage game of the week. The Washington football team traveling to Atlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons, 1-2, rough start for them. Washington, 1-2, rough start for them. Rough start for everybody. I'm gonna take Washington in this one. I just feel like they have the best unit of any of these teams, which is still that defense. Despite the early season struggles, maybe they get it figured out against a reeling Matt Ryan. We talked about Big Ben being washed. Maybe we should start talking about Matt Ryan. I don't know. Let's see how this week goes, but give me Washington on the road.
Good rebound game for Washington. Minus 1.5, over under set at 48. Good rebound game for them. Give me Washington on the road. Following that game, Houston, they're leaving the Lone Star State and headed up to Buffalo, the birth of Buffalo Wings. Birthplace of Buffalo Wings, not the birth. Take on the Bills. Give me Buffalo. Buffalo by a million. I don't even care what the over-under is.
It doesn't matter. It's Davis Mills versus Josh Allen in a shootout. Give me Josh Allen 1,000 times out of 1,000. Bills starting off 2-1, Mitch, but they are tied with the Broncos for the best point differential through three games, plus 50 for the Bills so far this season, despite being 2-1. Broncos also plus 50 in their 3-0 start. So that's going to go up even more this week against the Texans. Bills at home getting it done.
Bills, 16.5 point favorites.
Ooh, that's a line you just don't want to touch. Don't trust the 16. Don't trust the plus on the 16. I don't like that.
Don't hit any of them. I mean, if you want to hit the over under, go for it. Because the money line is minus 1250. The over under set at 47.5. Just bet the over under because, you know, don't even touch it.
That's a tough. You never want to see a line that high. It's just too much risk there. Mitch, We're going to the Big Easy. The New Orleans Saints and Jameis Winston, LASIK surgery and all, taking on the fumble machine, Daniel Jones, and the New York Giants. Talk about a matchup of quarterbacks who are notorious for turning the ball over a lot. Jameis versus Daniel Jones. Over under five fumbles on the game between the two of them, Mitch. You like that? I'm going to take, give me, I told you, Saints going to win and lose games alternately throughout the entire season. I'm taking the Giants. It doesn't have to make sense for me to do it, Mitch. Giants over the Saints the road.
You'd be taking Giants plus 8.5.
Why not?
Okay. I'll take the Saints. I'll take the Saints minus 8.5, minus 385 money line, over under 43.5. Kind of a low scoring week from what it looks like.
Yeah, interesting.
Following that game, we have Kansas City. They're leaving the state of Missouri to head over to the city of brotherly love to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Give me Kansas City. I like Kansas City in this game. A good rebound game for them. Get back to 2-2. Like both of us said earlier, don't be worried about the Kansas City Chiefs. They get back to 2-2. Give me Kansas City.
Yeah, we talked about how tough the schedule was to start the season for Kansas City. Finally, a game where maybe you can maybe take a bit of a breath, trust that your defense not going to be too truly tested during the game, allow your offense a little more flexibility. Like you said, a great bounce back opportunity for the Chiefs. Andy Reid's old stomping grounds there in Philadelphia. Give me the Chiefs over the Eagles on the road. Up next, Mitch, my Carolina Panthers, 3-0, headed to Jerry World to take on Dak Prescott, Tony Pollard, and the Dallas Cowboys. Mitch, this is a great game. a sneaky underrated game this week. A very the first real test for the Panthers. That second week game against the Saints, you know, early in the season, didn't know much about the Saints. We know that this Dallas team can score points. We know this is a good team. How is Carolina's defense going to respond? How is Sam Darnold going to respond now that they're getting more and more attention? Big game for the Panthers. But I'm believing, Mitch. I'm believing in this team. Give me the Panthers on the road with a big statement win over the Cowboys.
You know, I'm high on those Panthers for you. I'm with you. I have to have something to believe in this NFL season. But right now, the Cowboys, -5, -200 on the money line, over under set at 15.5. Give me the boys. Give me the boys at home against the Panthers in a tight one. I don't think the Cowboys cover. I think this is a very tight one. And I would not be surprised if the Panthers won this game, but I got to take the Cowboys at home.
Sure. No, and listen, for me as a Panthers fan, close loss is still a win for the Panthers in my book. Showing you're competitive against a team that's expected to be in the playoffs is all the Panthers need to do on Sunday. Win is just icing on the cake for me. We're in the afternoon slate, Mitch.
Yes, we are. Following that game, the Seahawks, they leave the Emerald City to head down to the city by the bay, the San Francisco, take on the 49ers. 49ers right now, -3. I like San Francisco in this game. I got Seattle to win the Super Bowl or to be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl. But this is going to be another really close game, much like that Panthers Cowboys game. Very close, but give me the 49ers.
Yeah, this one of two NFC West matchups we have here back to back, starting with Seattle and San Francisco. Niners 2-1, Seahawks 1-2. We talked at length about both of those teams earlier today. Give me the Niners at home. I'm taking them mainly as the home team here, feeling confident in that, and the early season struggles with the Seahawks, which I believe they will turn around by the end of the season. This is a tough matchup against a good Niners team. So give me the Niners at home.
Okay.
Up next, Mitch, Cardinals and Rams, the second half of this NFC West matchup. Both teams 3-0. Big now, opportunity for the Cardinals to prove their worth.
This would be game of the week had it not been for a future matchup, right?
Yes, I think there's a particular primetime matchup that's going to trump. This one's a close second, though. Two 3-0 teams, division matchup. This is definitely a must-watch if you have the chance. Cardinals at Rams. I believe in this Rams team, though. Give me the Rams in a close game that maybe still proves that the Cardinals are legit if they can hang through 3.5 quarters with the Rams. But give me LA at home.
Almost my underdog lock of the week. But not quite. I got to take the Rams in this one, -4.5. Money line set at -225, over under set at 45.5. I believe in this Rams team just like you do. But this Cardinals team, very good. I just think that the Rams won't cover in this one because this will be a very, very close game, but a very good game nonetheless.
Yeah, and I, real quick before we move on, I'm most excited to see Kyler Murray against a legitimate defense. You know, Titans, good defense, not great. Vikings, you know, early season struggles. Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, that's it. He's going to get the Rams, Niners, and Browns the next couple weeks. True defensive test. He's been electric to start. MVP candidate early on in this season, in my mind. True test coming up on Sunday on the road. Let's see how he fares against a good Rams D.
Exactly. Following that game, we have Pittsburgh. They are leaving the Steel City to head over to Cheese City to take on the Green Bay Packers. Give me the Packers in this one. Packers -6.5. Like I've said earlier, Dallas said earlier, not big believers in this Steelers team. Aaron Rodgers has showed up after that week one blowout. This is a team that is very, very good. Give me the Packers.
Yeah, hard to take
the Steelers Packers in this at game. Home.
Right. What's the line on this one, Mitch?
The line for this one is -278 for the Packers, +215 for the Steelers, -6.5 Packers at home. Okay. So.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to take Green Bay. Hard to pick the Steelers in this one, especially at Green Bay. Hard to pick against the Packers at home. This was a pretty easy one for me, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mitch, final Sunday afternoon game. We have the Baltimore Ravens and the GOAT, Justin Tucker, traveling to the Mile High City. Can he hit a 70-yarder in Denver, Mitch? I bet you he can. We might find out on Sunday as they take on the 3-0 Denver Broncos. First real test of the season for the Broncos. Are they legit? Are they, you know, products of an easy early slate? We'll find out on Sunday, Mitch. Give me the Ravens in this game. I'm not going to pick the Broncos. The Ravens are legit. They can get it done in a low-scoring affair if they need. And I just don't trust that Broncos offense enough. Haven't seen enough early to believe in them yet. So give me the Ravens.
Another really close candidate for underdog lock of the week because the Broncos are actually favored in this game. -1.5.
Wow. Are you serious?
Early lines have them at -1.5, -122 on the money line, over under set at 44.5. This would be a great, if the lines stay the same by Sunday, this would be a really good pick to make on the Ravens. And I'm going to ride that Ravens train because I think that this Broncos team is not very good. Give me the Ravens at +1.5 to beat the Broncos at home in Mile High. Because I don't think this line is going to stay the same, but if it does, for you betting people out there, for you gambling people out there, very good pick for you, I think. Give me the Ravens.
I like it.
Following that, we have Sunday night. Tampa Bay, game of the week, right? This is game of the week?
No, this is what you thought was game of the week?
Tom Brady going back to New England? Are you kidding
me? To play
me?
What? Shitty Mac Jones and the Patriots? No, Monday night's game of the week, Mitch.
Okay, well,
I wasn't going to put Cardinals and Rams behind this one. Listen, the storyline is great. Don't get me wrong. Not taking anything away from the return of Tom Brady with the new team and the Super Bowl ring, coming back to visit old, you know, crusty old Bill up there in New England. This is not going to be a good game.
Crusty.
Yes, he's a little crusty. Let's be honest.
I'm not saying it's
he's worn. He's like an old fisherman there in the Boston area. You know, look, worn. The sea salt air has aged his features.
Like the pirates on that pirate ship.
Yeah, you know that movie, The Lighthouse, with William Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. These two guys go mad in a while. That's Bill Belichick by the end of his Patriots tenure. He's like those guys.
He's like Bootstrap Bill from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Stuck in Davy Jones' ship. You know, that's Bill Belichick. I know it's got to be Bucks in this one.
It is Bucks. Bucks are -7 favorites right now. Money line set at -315, over under at 49. Of course it's the Bucks. I just thought maybe that it was game of the week because of the storyline behind it. Going back to New England, Tom Brady going back to New England where he won 5 chips, coming back as the defending Super Bowl champion for another team to play against the team and the head coach that he was with for those 5 previous titles. But if that's not your game of the week, I'm okay with this Monday night game being game of the week.
Sure. You know, listen, great storyline. Don't get me wrong. We pick game of the week for the football game we want to watch. And for me, Mitch, and I think for you, despite all those great matchups we talked about, it's Monday night. And in what is a marquee matchup for the AFC West early on here, Las Vegas Raiders, 3-0, traveling to SoFi to take on the Los Angeles Chargers, coming off of the upset of the Kansas City Chiefs. Does either of these teams want to make a play for the division title? Here's an opportunity for an early season statement to say, you know what, Kansas City, you better watch out for us. If you're the Chargers and you go back-to-back weeks beating the Chiefs and the Raiders, and you're saying, hey, look, don't count us out. If you're the Raiders, you get to 4-0, and you're telling everybody else, all right, we put the margin up. Now you got to catch us. Big week, big game on Monday night. Mitch, give me Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers at home in a tight matchup. And what's the over under, Mitch?
Over under at 52.5.
Take the over. Are you kidding me? Hey, the number one offense in the NFL against Justin Herbert and that Chargers offense. I mean, what if it was over under 70, I'd take the over. Come on. Chargers at home.
You know, this was another really close one for underdog lock of the week. Because at +4, +162, give me the Raiders on the road in SoFi to get it done on Monday night. Go to 4-0. I am all in on the Vegas Raiders. Give me the Raiders. Give me John Gruden. Give me Vegas Derek Carr. I love it all. I love it all. And I'm hammered in the over with you. I'm hammered in the over because guess what? This is going to be a high scoring shootout type of game. I think this is where we see that Raiders defense lapse a little bit. And the Chargers defense, Chargers offense kind of exposes them just a touch. But I don't think it's going to be a knock on the Raiders at all because I think that Raiders offense is so damn good. And you've got to believe I'm going to take the Raiders. Give me the Raiders.
See, this is why this is game of the week, Mitch, because there's just so much excitement about this game. It's going to be a lot of a point. It's going to be a lot of points. Some exciting new teams on our radar. We're used to the Chiefs. We're used to the Rams. We're used to the Ravens. These are new teams to be excited about, and it's exciting that we get it on Monday night. After you take the Monday night football scheduler out of the pit of misery, redeems himself with Chargers Raiders on Monday night. Well done, NFL. Well done, ESPN. And what should be, Mitch, a fantastic matchup. That is it for our quick picks, Mitch. And that is it for the Sports Hour today. Chock full of NFL recap. A lot of stuff on the horizon with the MLB postseason, the beginning of the NBA season, more NFL as we continue, and always sprinkling in, you know, our favorite college football teams.
That's right.
The Bama Crimson Tide and our BYU Cougars. So always more to come here on the Sports Hour, but we appreciate you sticking around, hanging out with us today as you listened. If you do not already, follow us on social. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram is at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. And follow us on Anchor so you can participate with us there.
That's right. And what you can listen to us literally wherever you want, right, Dallin? I mean, we are literally wherever you want. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Go ahead and get on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating, review. Tell us we suck. Because, dude, that's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better, Mitch. We appreciate those who participated this week with our Instagram stories question. Be sure to participate in those because we do want to hear from you. We appreciate your feedback, so continue to do that. Stick with us as we are back with a new episode every week. Mitch, it's been a pleasure. You look great in that Bama hat with Bear Bryant behind you. What a beautiful era of Mitch Dodd fandom ahead of us here with the Crimson Tide.
That's right. No, we're excited. Roll damn Tide.
Roll damn Tide. All right, my friend. It's been a pleasure. Thank you guys again for listening this week. And we will catch you next week.
Roll Tide. Roll. See ya.